A few weeks ago, I wrote a piece on my blog about the word mad and how it's coded language. Coded in that it is used to describe a person or group of people in order to dehumanize what that person or persons is actually attempting to convey. A prime example is what's happening in Baltimore right now. And before I go any further, when I wrote that piece, it was when Ferguson was in full swing and had captured the attention of the entire world. Many times the word mad has been used to describe protesters. What should be used, and note this is a word often used by right-wing political pundits on major news networks, and oftentimes is used by any news reporter because it's become so ingrained in our language, but what should be used is the word angry. These people are angry. They are angry that their neighbors are being killed by police. They are angry that there is no justice in sight for them. And they are angry that racism has evolved into something that has become more tolerable just by using certain words. But mad? No. No, they aren't mad. Mad is a word that is coined for madness, which is equated to insanity, which can be equated to rabid, which can be equated to dogs, and oftentimes it's used to describe dogs. See how we got there? With just a few words, we can see how political pundits view protesters in places like Baltimore and Ferguson, like dogs. We've also got a new N-word. The word thug has been tossed about with wild abandon by many a sportscaster and news broadcaster, often to describe young black men. The first big usage that I began to notice was in 2014 around the Super Bowl when the Seattle Seahawks had won. And it was just before then when Richard Sherman, a cornerback for the Seahawks, was being called a thug for certain things that he said and certain things that he did. Now the word has been used to describe any young black man, from Sherman all the way to Mike Brown, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, and hundreds more. Literally hundreds more. Thug is just a new way racists feel they can get away with saying the N-word, because they've been told that the N-word is a racist word, and they don't want to be caught using it, therefore being branded a racist. Because let's face it, open bigots will use the N-word without any hesitation whatsoever. They don't care about sensitivity, and they don't care about such things, and they don't care if they are being called a racist, because as a matter of fact, they'd like being called a racist. That's what their whole platform is. It's a secret racist that you have to figure out about. There's also coded language in how things are reported. For many, the actions of Baltimore and Ferguson, and many other cities in the United States that relate to the murder of young black men, are protests. They are protests by those in the black community who are fed up with the double standard that is the justice system. Now, granted, there are whites and Asian Americans and Native Americans that are partaking in many of these protests as well, but predominantly, the people that are behind the protests are black people in those communities. This is a new form of slavery, one might say. That new form of slavery happens to be the for-profit jails in the United States. And that's what the justice system has become. It's a revolving door to send black people, particularly young black men, and there's a lot of young black women that are being sent to prison as well. It's in the United States Constitution. Slavery was abolished, yes, but it was not abolished in the form of incarceration. Of course, these protests are not being called protests. They're being called riots. Let's not forget, however, the original Gay Pride Parade, how it's a joyous celebration now. The original one was called a riot. The original one was the Stonewall Riots. Many are also saying that classism is the new racism. Unfortunately, this is also coded language to attempt to make some white people feel better, in a way, sort of. Maybe it's the way that white people, and I include myself there sometimes, can empathize with those in the black community. But classism is not racism. It just isn't. African Americans and African Canadians and First Nation people can feel the effect of classism and racism. White people can only feel the effect of classism. Now, I hear some people saying that racism can be affected against white people, that a black person called you a cracker just 15 minutes ago and it made you feel bad. That's name-calling. That's all it is. No worse than me calling someone a dickhead. Racism is an institutional thing. It has grown and it has evolved. And it has grown up for over hundreds of years. For as long as there has been slavery, for as long as there has been colonization, there has been racism. There's laws that are set in place to ensure that marginalized people, with the example of colonialism, First Nations people in the United States and Canada, and with regard to slavery, African American people, but these are put in place to ensure that marginalized people cannot get ahead. Often, and especially in North America, this racism makes sure that white European descendants have a better chance than people of color. From there, it's the language the oppressors used against the marginalized people. And there's a lot of different language that was used against those marginalized people. If you think it didn't happen in Canada, it does. There are several examples, but we are not going on that type of a historical route today. Classism is whereby the wealthy attempt to put in place laws that those who cannot afford certain privileges and therefore can't get ahead because of it. Let's say, for example, university tuition fees. Someone in a lower middle income family or a poorer family might not be able to go to university because they can't afford the tuition. They can't afford all the expenses that come along with going to a higher education. That's just a fact. That happens to both black people and poor white people. But it's only classism that affects white people. If I'm white and I want to go to university, there's a good chance I won't be denied because of the fact that I'm white, but there is also a good chance that I'll be not denied because of the fact that I don't have the tuition and I can't afford to go. There's an interesting history lesson I heard a while ago, which told where the divide between poor white people and poor black people really began. At one time, blacks and poor whites had a common affliction. They weren't getting any money. They were treated like shit by the wealthy, and they faced hundreds of obstacles in order to get ahead, black people especially. Keep in mind, this is when slavery was still legal in the southern United States and what eventually became the Confederacy. The wealthy saw what was happening. There was a possible chance that poor white people and black slaves who had actually attained freedom might get together and might overthrow something, might actually make the wealthy not king of the roost, so to speak. There was a small aspect of empathy, albeit a very, very small aspect, between poor white farmers and workers in the South and black slaves. Poor people can't get money. Blacks were mistreated as slaves. So the wealthy sort of gave poor whites a club card of sorts. Here's a club card. You're white. That means you're one of us. If there weren't any slaves, then there would be more jobs for the poor in the South. So it was kind of a brainwashing tactic and a brainwashing technique. And it does sound a little far-fetched, sure, but it's happening right now in the form of immigration policies and discussions surrounding illegal aliens getting work in the United States. The cry is that Mexicans are stealing jobs, but in fact, many companies that deal in day labor are hiring Mexicans who manage to jump the border looking for work. The wealthy are always crying about jobs being stolen by day laborers from Mexico or being shipped overseas or anything along those lines, but they themselves are the ones that are hiring day laborers from Mexico because they can get away with paying them less. And they are also the ones who are too busy shipping jobs to dictatorships that don't have human rights laws in place. Mad, thug, riot, classism. Those are just four words of coded language that are often used in ways to dehumanize, to vilify, and denounce the actions of those looking to progress on the civil rights front. There are those who might say that I can't say that I know any of this information because I'm not American. I'm Canadian, and therefore I don't know what it's like to live in that type of a situation. But I'm a Canadian. I live north of the border. I live just outside the glass house. There's a lot of American entertainment and American media that we get up here in Canada. So we get to see a front row seat of all of it. But you're right. I don't know 100% of what it's like to live in the States. And I don't know 100% of what it's like to live in some of the poorer areas of places like Ferguson, Missouri, or Baltimore, Maryland. But I also am painfully aware that this country, meaning Canada, is far from being perfect. But as I said before, that is a discussion for another time.